For over 25 years, Sports Illustrated Kids has delivered sports the way kids want to read about it. And we've delivered it every month in print. Now, we're happy to be relaunching SIKids.com. The new site was designed to be mobile first to give our audience the content it craves in an easily digestible way. It's also designed with kids in mind, and with it, we'll be able to engage with our readers on a daily or even hourly basis. Kids are some of the most passionate sports fans around. We plan to make this site the experience they deserve. Head to SIKids.com right now to check it out. Again, that's SIKids.com.
So here's the question then, like, do you think LeBron's going to leave?
Well, so that's the question, though, is, okay, where would they team up? I mean, can LeBron convince these guys to come to Cleveland? Like, can they do a CP3 for Kyrie trade? Can they do a Kevin Love for Carmelo trade? The Dwayne Wade part, to me, that's the curious part. I don't know exactly how that would work, and I don't think he would ever leave Miami. I still tend to believe LeBron will stay in Cleveland, but if he is the only one of their big three there next year, I wouldn't be surprised at all. If both Kyrie and Kevin Love are gone, it wouldn't shock me.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Open Floor. Another week, another pod. I've got Ben Golliver on the line. What's going on, Ben?
Not too much. How's it going?
I mean, you got the new mic. Life is good.
Oh yeah, we're balling now. I mean, we went from ashy to classy. Got the new Blue Ice microphone so people can actually hear me. I'm not in the middle of a subway tunnel. It's big time.
Yeah, the streets were calling for it and we responded.
So let's just get straight to basketball. That's all anybody really cares about. No, I mean, clearly it was a busy weekend. We had college basketball, too much craziness going on there. We had some pretty good NBA games. Highlighted, I think, by Warriors Spurs, but there was also a pretty good Thunder Rockets game the other night. So we got a lot.
Can we start with the biggest story in basketball?
Let me guess.
LeBron's Twitter.
How did I know we were coming back to this of all things? Yes. Okay, let's do it.
I'm sorry, man. I can't get over it. Like this, there were some people when this all broke, there were some people who came forward like holier than thou. Like, why is this a story? Is this going to be on First Take all day? But like, this is a story. It's weird that he unfollowed the Cavs on Twitter. I mean, like, how do you feel about everything?
It's definitely a story. No question about it. It was a story even before he got asked about it. And then he did an amazing job of adding fuel to the fire in his post-game interviews. Everybody who says LeBron's calculating is 100% right. And remember, this is a guy who's been in movies. Like, he was basically the headliner of that one movie. I didn't see it, but I'm sure you know what it was called.
Was that More Than a Game, maybe? Was that the documentary or Trainwreck?
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, he's been in movies and I thought he was basically acting in that post-game press conference. He knew the question was going to come about unfollowing.
LeBron, you may not like this one and I'm not thrilled asking it. I'm obviously trying to diffuse this a little bit, but it appears that you unfollowed the Cavs on Twitter today and it's caused quite a stir. Why did you do that or what would go into that?
Next question.
But yeah, let me break that down like this Zapruder film. First of all, it was like a 40. It was like a 45 second question, right? So if the PR lady was going to just say next question, there was plenty of opportunities to do that. So obviously they were waiting to see how LeBron was going to handle it. LeBron really body language brushed it off so over the top. Like, and he's not really the type to kind of duck questions. So he sort of had the whole act going. And then the follow up, I felt bad for the follow up question guy. I really did. I mean, it was just kind of
follow up guy was my favorite part because it's like, oh, here's this like really awkward moment. And then let me jump in and ask about like the 38 assists. Let's talk about the assist numbers in Cleveland.
And then like to just duck from there, knowing that that's just going to fuel it again. I mean, he had to know and he's always in on it. So to
it's
me,
so
the
weird.
Whole thing was scripted. It was almost like an act of his play.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Let me preface this by saying that I like LeBron. I'm rooting for him. And also I think that like if you look at the way his career has gone, he's been in the spotlight since he was 16 years old, and he came of age right as the media sort of went to this insane 24-hour place. So and the internet came into play, and like, I think if you, nobody has a better excuse for being crazy than LeBron James. Like, it makes sense. But at the same time, as someone who's rooting for him, like, just cut this out. It's like, it's a bad look for him to be all this passive aggressive stuff on social media is a bad look. And it is a story. Like, I have people I follow who I would not unfollow for professional reasons. And it's like, any person in the media has that. Any person on, like, you don't defriend certain people on Facebook, because then it causes this whole thing. And like, it was weird to unfollow them. And it was even weirder for LeBron to pretend that this was like no big deal, and we were the people, everybody else was sort of freaking out for no reason.
Yeah, we're all making a big deal out of something when the background between team and player involves a Comic Sans letter with, you know, quote unquote the king. Yeah. And, you know, basically people burning his jerseys and everything else. I mean, come on, there's a lot of backstory here. You can't expect people not to read into that, especially when, you know, all these other reports are already out there and he's already seemed so frustrated. So yeah, he knew exactly what he was doing. My one beef with the situation was that the way he handled it afterwards was just so predictable. And I actually told Kenny Ducey, one of our other SINBA guys, I told him before it happened, here's how it's going to go. He's going to blow off the questions and look totally upset, and then a source close to LeBron is going to explain to the local media, you know, some side explanation, probably something to do about how he's trying to be focused and whatever. And boom, what do you know, right on cue, you know, that's kind of how it played out. You know, I think
Are you saying you don't believe in Zero Dark 23?
Not really. I do also think, though, there was like kind of a push and pull with this, too, because at the same time, he went out and had a triple double and just totally blew away the Nuggets on the court. Right. So it was sort of like he was making a point both on the court and off, which, and I think it's the same point. It's like, you guys need me a lot more than I need you. You think that I need you and that I'm trapped here in Cleveland. But I don't see it that way. To me, that's the only point that you can take away from this, because why else are you going to be, you know, number one, doing all these passive aggressive things like you're mentioning, but then number two, also just kind of at this very same time going out there and totally dominating and showing these guys like Kyrie and Kevin Love, who are maybe underperforming, like, look, I'm the alpha and the omega from this team.
So that's, I hear that, and that's why this bums me out, because like, if LeBron wasn't even saying anything this year, if he was just sort of like either not talking to the media or giving the most boring answers imaginable, everyone would be falling over themselves to sort of, in the shadow of Steph, there would be this undercurrent, like, LeBron is still really good and like people are forgetting about LeBron. But instead we're getting this weird passive aggressive thing, and like, I think it would be more fun if he were just openly taking shots at Kyrie and Love and just being the like grumpy old man and embracing it.
Well, let's pivot here for 1 second, because we got a story out today saying, you know, quoting LeBron from February, saying at some point in his career, he'd like to team up with Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, and Dwayne Wade, sort of like his best buddies. I like to refer to this as sort of like the banana boat squad. And they would, you know, at some point, maybe later in his career is what he's implying, and he would take a discount so that he would be able to play with them. This is something I mentioned last week, kind of in response to the Warriors. I think the Warriors are set up so well here going forward that these other stars are going to really have to seriously consider consolidating. And whether it's the older stars like LeBron, whether it's that next generation guys like Durant and Westbrook in that mix, or whether it's even younger guys like DeMarcus Cousins and whoever else, there are so many stranded stars out there, just sort of, you know, one man shows almost spread out around the league. You're never going to beat a machine like Golden State or San Antonio by yourself. It's just not going to happen. If LeBron can't do it, these other guys can't do it. And so I think we've really got to open our minds wide to the crazy possibilities of like what could happen either, you know, this summer or the coming summer. I think some of these stars are smart enough to realize like if they do team up, that's their best shot here.
Yeah. I mean, so here, let me, I just pulled up the article or the excerpt from Howard Beck at Bleacher Report. "I really hope that before our career is over, we can all play together," James said. "At least one, maybe one or two seasons, me, Melo, D-Wade, CP, we can get a year in. I would actually take a pay cut to do that. Maybe at the end of their careers," James said. "Maybe sooner. One more ring chase, this time with everyone on board. It would be pretty cool," James said. I've definitely had thoughts about it. Before bounding away, he smiles and closes with a coy chirp. "We'll see." And so, like, so maybe it's the way it's written that, that like a sort of throwaway exchange becomes more dramatic. But I do think the LeBron that I like is the guy who like is really close with his friends and doesn't care that they all play for different teams. And he's just like tight with his people. And, so I think it's cool that he would consider playing with them. I think it's really lame to talk about this like 3 weeks before the playoffs. I think it's a bad look for him. And it's the type of stuff, it's this type of like little sort of like passive aggressive, like BS that is distracting people from a dude who's putting up 33, 11 and 11.
Yeah, no, just in his defense. So, I mean, I guess the quote was from February and, you know, it just kind of got sat on for a little bit. But but still, I mean, it's in the middle of a season where he supposedly has his new big three and he's the leader of this next era of the Cavs. Right. I mean, when he went there, we all just assumed that was going to be it for the rest of his career. He's got two younger supporting cast members who are going to kind of carry that next wave, you know, with him in Kyrie and Kevin Love. And, you know, part of why they traded Wiggins was because they wanted to kind of have the balance between winning now and kind of waiting so that LeBron could kind of be totally fulfilled, you know, in the second half of his career. So to kind of, you know, even suggest these totally radical departures from that game plan, that's also news. I mean, you can't undercut and be like, oh, this is just rumors. He's already shown once in his career that he can do it. I mean, they've made it happen mechanically with the collective bargaining agreement in 2010. They put together the big three. They won multiple titles. And these guys are desperate. Every single one of those guys needs a ring, with the exception of Dwayne Wade. I think his legacy is pretty secure. But Carmelo is the most irrelevant superstar in the NBA right now. I mean, I saw them, you know, play against the Lakers. I mean, what's even the point of what Carmelo is doing, you know, at this stage of his career? And if he doesn't see that, you know, I almost feel bad for him, because this guy is such a talented player and he's going out there for these terrible teams year after year. You know, no chance of really doing anything in the playoffs. I mean, really, what is the point of his existence on that level of a player? And same thing with Chris Paul. Chris Paul, this is my go-to stat for you. When Chris Paul's on the court after the All-Star break, the Clippers have the number one offense in the NBA, better even than the Warriors. When he's off the court, they have the worst offense by more than 6 points, worse than the Phoenix Suns. So he is a complete one-man army for the Clippers. And what's that going to get him? You know, it's going to be a second round exit, probably a sweep or five games against the Warriors. And so what's the point there? Is that really what you want your legacy to be if you're the best point guard of your generation? Probably not. I think these guys are getting to the point where everything should be on the table for them. If I was them, I would totally be feeling the clock ticking and I would want to do something drastic.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who I've defended Carmelo for like it feels like 10 years at this point. I would love to see him go somewhere where there's actually a chance to contend. Chris Paul, I'm constantly on his corner. And when Blake goes out, it's crazy because he's just takes it up a level and becomes like one of the two or three best players in the league. My biggest question with Chris Paul is how much longer he can do this. But here's the question then, like, do you think LeBron's going to leave?
Well, so that's the question though, is okay, where would they team up? I mean, can LeBron convince these guys to come to Cleveland? Like, can they do a CP3 for Kyrie trade? Can they do a Kevin Love for Carmelo trade? And then, the Dwayne Wade part, to me, that's the curious part. I don't know exactly how that would work, and I don't think he would ever leave Miami. So then that becomes, do they all just go mob to Miami? I mean, can they figure out some way to meet up there? And I don't know how that would work, because so many of those guys would have to be traded because they're under contract. I don't think Miami's got the assets. So it does seem like it's pretty difficult to imagine the full accumulation, like the full Wu-Tang Clan convergence for these guys. I still tend to believe LeBron will stay in Cleveland. But if he is the only one of their big three there next year, I wouldn't be surprised at all. If both Kyrie and Kevin Love are gone, it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. At the beginning of Da Vinci Code LeBron, like 3 weeks ago, someone mentioned it to me, but sort of raised the possibility, like, do you think he'll leave? And I thought it was crazy and then thought more about it. And it was like, he's taking shots at Kyrie. I don't know how tradable Kyrie even is at this point, because he's kind of, I mean, he's injury prone. He makes a ton of money. It'll be interesting. The thing with LeBron is, if he leaves, it puts so much pressure on him to go win a title somewhere else.
I think that's there already, though, right? I mean, he's facing that in Cleveland too, and I think that's part of the reason why he's frustrated. I mean, they have a pretty deep team there. They got a lot of pieces, and it still doesn't really feel like they have a shot. And I think that's sort of this impulse right now. It's like the fight or flight. I think he's kind of in flight mode a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited for the playoffs to start, mostly so that we can get away from this, like, this weird zone we've been in. We can go the other direction and LeBron can just become, like, openly antagonistic of his teammates, because that would be fun too. And honestly, the other thing with LeBron is, once you embrace that he's like kind of corny, he's easier to love. So that's been my approach over the past few years. But let's move on. I was in Boston. We should talk Celtics. I'll talk about my story a little bit. I wrote about Brad Stevens and the Celtics organization in general and where they are. And it's just like, there's no team in the league that I'm more jealous of right now as a fan of the Wizards who've been struggling, and just in general, like, they've sort of got it all. Like, the team they have now is full of guys who are sort of like passed over and are like, they're the, like, the prototypical fun underdog team. They just, like, Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder just ball. And then, and the rest of the team is just sort of this, like, odd group of misfits. And then at the same time, you've got, like, the Nets picks and cap space and just all this flexibility going forward. It's just sort of, they've got the best of both worlds. And so I went to Boston. It was great. I talked to Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, and some of the players. And my biggest takeaway is that this is all so unfair, because the rest of the league, it's just like, basketball isn't supposed to be like this.
Okay. Will they win a playoff series?
So I think they will. I mean, it's going to depend on the matchups, but like, if it's Boston versus the Hornets, who do you take there?
Well, my take has been that Boston should win a playoff series this year. And if they don't, that would be a little bit troubling to me. I just think, in terms of their total accumulation of talent, how well they play together, clear defensive identity, style of play, as long as they've got Crowder, I think they should win a playoff series against a lot of the teams that are sort of in that mix. I just trust them a little bit more than a lot of, especially some of the newer blood teams. But if they don't have home court, and then they're going against these teams and maybe that have more size in the backcourt, depending on how the matchups shake out, that it could get tricky. But I think that their baseline should be second round or bust.
Yeah, it's wild how valuable Crowder is. It's like, I left there, a couple different people with the team were like that dude's our MVP. People talk, even Ainge was like, people give Isaiah a ton of credit, but like, it's guys like Crowder and Avery Bradley who sort of have allowed him to become an all-star. But I agree with you that basically their ceiling gets so much higher if they make a little playoff run here, because then the rest of the league starts to take notice. And then it's like, anything is possible this summer, because like, I think the Durant stuff is at least realistic. It's no crazier than the dreams that the rest of the league has.
Okay, so how many teams do you have Durant signing with this summer?
So, all right, hold up. I think next week we're going to have to dive in to like a full-on KD conspiracy theory pod, because there's a lot of different directions that my mind has taken this summer. But if you're Durant, doesn't Boston make a lot of sense? I mean, like, first of all, you go to the East, you get away from the Clippers, Spurs, Warriors, like death trap. And then at the same time, I mean, like, we've already talked about how I don't think that the Warriors is a good look for KD. And I also wonder whether there was a big story today from Ethan Strauss about Nike and Under Armour. And I kind of wonder whether Nike would want KD next to Steph. But that's a whole other thing. So, but Boston, there's a ton of history there, and the roster is like perfectly set up for Durant to go in and just sort of cook every night, like 35 a game. It would be a lot of fun.
Well, I think the other appetizing part about Boston is that they've got so many of these draft assets and these smaller contract young guys where you can basically put together any kind of a package you want to get another superstar beside him. So let's just say you got the verbal commitment from KD. You know, can you put together their lottery pick, whoever they take, plus some of these other guys, almost in a very Cleveland like Kevin Love type trade, same kind of method. And then now all of a sudden you're pitching him on not only the coach and not only, you know, guys like Crowder who are going to do the dirty work, but also a second superstar. I mean, I think that basically the sky's the limit for what they can do. It just kind of comes down to whether that's more appetizing to him than, you know, the current setup in Oklahoma City. But going back to your previous theory about like him for the Lakers, I if I was him, I would take the Celtics over the Lakers from a pure basketball standpoint and just organizational standpoint, structure, infrastructure, all that stuff. I mean, it's not even close where those two teams are right now. And I think that was something that really should be the takeaway from your piece about the Celtics, was that you know, the table is really set from the very top down there in a way that a lot of other organizations just can't match.
That was definitely walking around Boston, I mean, and talking to some of the people there, it's just it shouldn't be this hard to run a smart basketball team. I mean, like, this stuff is not that complicated, but you look at some of the teams around the league, whether it's Cleveland, whether it's both LA teams, whether it's New York, Chicago, like there's not only is there just sort of like a lack of focus, but it's like everybody's insecure about their jobs. Everybody's sort of like, there are power struggles. And in Boston, it's like Ainge and Brad Stevens work together. And I think it's the security and stability there is a credit as much to the ownership, who sort of make that possible. It's just pretty impressive to see what they've put together, and everybody's kind of on the same page. And the Durant stuff, we'll see. I'm way ahead of you dreaming up different people that they can trade for. I think Boogie would be interesting, except that the history with Boogie and Isaiah is kind of sketchy. And I also, like, 2 weeks ago, there was a vine of Boogie and Durant cursing each other out. So maybe that's not such a good option. But I like Horford, I think, is also interesting, but he's going to need to, he at this point in his career is due like $130 million or something. And I mean, he's old. He's like, I think he's 32 years old, right?
That might be slightly older than he is, but yeah, he's 30 or so.
Oh, he's 29. All right. So, but yeah, there's a lot of miles on Horford. And so I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. The other thing that I think is interesting with the Celtics is that, like, you look at Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley and Isaiah, and they're not superstars, but to trade for someone like Kevin Love or Blake Griffin, or even someone like Jimmy Butler or Paul George, like, they'd have to give up all of those guys for that superstar. And I don't know. Like, do you think that's worth it at this point? Like, do they need, like, the way I think about it is then you're sort of back at square one where a lot of these guys are stranded around the league, and like the core that they have now is good enough so that the upgrade to from a B plus to an A is maybe not worth it.
I hear what you're saying, but I think we've got a long track record of needing superstars to win titles. I think the Celtics feel from the top down, it's a championship mentality. I mean, they're not just trying to make the Eastern Conference Finals and be everybody's darling, right? I mean, that would be amazing this season, but sort of big picture, if you're going to be competing with teams that are already set up for the next 5 years, the Golden States and the San Antonios of the world, and frankly, the East is wide open. I mean, they should be that team. They've already gone through the pain of multiple rebuilding years. I mean, they're in position to do it. At some point, you're going to have to make this big move for superstar talent. I think that's kind of been Danny Ainge's approach, and it's nice that it hasn't required tons of pain this year. I mean, this has been a pretty charm season for them. But at some point, you got to cash in. And I think, and it's not just from the team standpoint, I keep harping on this, but a lot of these players have got to be feeling the pressure because everyone is in this Steph Curry shadow right now, right? I mean, the Warriors are casting this huge shadow. And when is this going to end? I mean, do you realistically think the Warriors are going to fall off next season? I don't. Are they going to fall off the year after that? I don't. So you're looking at, it's almost like, you know, we're here in 1992 when the Bulls are threatening to win, like, you know, the next decade's worth of championships because Jordan's, peaking and they've got great talent surrounding him. You've got to be thinking chess style about how you're going to be able to compete with these guys. Otherwise, you're just going to be runner up, you know, and you're going to be the Karl Malones and the Charles Barkleys of history.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. Next week, we're gonna take some time. I'm going to put together some KD conspiracy theories, and we're going to try to come up with a couple teams that a couple theoretical teams over the next few years who can beat the Warriors. Because I have some ideas. But other than that, I mean, I think you're right. It is that basically, like, they cast a shadow over the whole league, depending on what happens this offseason. Like, I'm not sure that things are going to change that much in Golden State. I mean, as long as Steph, Draymond, and Clay are still there, it's going to be an issue.
Okay, here's my dream scenario real quick. Here's one we're just going to kick this off with. What if Duncan and Manu retire this summer and KD signs with the Spurs?
All right. Well, so listen, I was going to put LeBron on the Spurs, but it's definitely a possibility. I do not want Durant in San Antonio. Like, we've had the contrast between the Thunder and the Spurs has been one of my favorite things in the NBA over the past like 5 or 6 years. I mean, like, one team is all about moving the ball and playing the right way, and then Durant and KD are just like, yo, we're better than you. We're going to do our thing. And it's like, I've loved rooting for the Thunder against the Spurs. I will be so bummed out if KD goes to San Antonio.
It would kind of be a Benedict Arnold play, wouldn't it? I mean, that's kind of,
it would be worse than the Warriors.
Ooh. All right. We'll table that one. That's a good point. I hadn't considered the treason aspect. But
the symbolic shift would be heartbreaking for me. But yeah, I mean, listen, the Spurs, if you put another superstar on the Spurs, like, what, they're right there right now. Why don't we just talk about Spurs Warriors right now? I mean, watching that game, it's going to be a 7-game series, and it's kind of 50-50 once we get to the playoffs with Spurs and Golden State.
I mean, that was a win that San Antonio needed so much. I mean, the counterpunch aspect to it after getting kind of humbled and humiliated in the first game, you could tell they were really going for it. They played their pace. Their defense was excellent, both on the arc and in the paint. I thought they did a great job of kind of charging out at Curry's threes, but then not getting burned by him off the dribble and still having the guys, you know, defending in the paint, contesting his shots. You know, Boris Diaw, played huge. Aldridge, the other thing I thought they really did, which, you know, might pain you as a Tar Heel, they picked on Harrison Barnes a little bit, didn't they?
I mean, Barnes, that's a whole other conversation, but his contract year has really taken a dark turn. Like, like, seriously, the Warriors missed Iguodala in that game, and Barnes is like the Andre Roberson of Golden State. It's like teams can just sort of like hide guys on him. I think that were the Spurs hiding Parker on him at all?
Well, so the main thing that I saw with Barnes was that the Spurs were trying to get LaMarcus switched off of Draymond so that they could have, like, when they were both small, so that instead of having Diaw on Barnes, which is kind of similar physically in terms of size and whatever, I mean, Diaw's obviously got about 50 extra pounds of croissants, but, like, you know, height-wise, that's pretty similar. But when they would get the switch with LaMarcus on Barnes, I mean, Barnes has no shot lengthwise to stay with LaMarcus. And so they would try to get that in the post, and he's just finishing easily over the top of him. They try to get him into isolation, and so LaMarcus can just get to his spots using his strength and then hit the turnaround over him. And then they would also try to get it on the boards, too. I mean, LaMarcus is... not necessarily known for his motor all the time, but when he's rebounding over the top of a guy like Harrison Barnes, I mean, that's a pretty easy prospect for him. So I actually thought Golden State defensively really missed Bogut almost more than anything, because Bogut's the guy who can just kind of chip at LaMarcus, make him uncomfortable, bully him a yeah. little bit. And then really they missed Iguodala, like you were saying, on offense, because they need that corner three guy as a release valve. And Barnes was pretty quiet.
So do you play fantasy basketball at all?
No, I'm on my high horse about that. I don't do it.
All right. Well, I got into it. I started like 2 years ago. Didn't think I was going to like it. I don't really like fantasy sports that much. Got really into fantasy basketball. And so I picked up Harrison Barnes like in November, thinking, all right, man, like he's part of like one of the greatest teams we've ever seen. Like he's gonna put up numbers. It like good things will happen. Then he misses like 8 weeks with a sprained ankle. I still have no idea what happened. And then like the numbers, he just offensively isn't the guy that everyone has sort of expected him to be, and that the Warriors, especially when Iguodala's out, need him to be. And so this is a long way of saying that going into the fantasy basketball playoffs, I was eliminated, and I finally just like cut Harrison Barnes from my team, and it was the best feeling I had all year. it was really cathartic.
The amazing thing is there's like 25 GMs out there who are thirsting after trying to sign him in free agency this summer.
Oh my God. It's yeah. Well, cause there's enough there to sort of, to talk yourself into it. And then this has been true since Carolina. There's enough talent that it's like, this guy can be a star. And I think in the right situation, he can be better than he's been in Golden State. But, I would not want to pay him $100 million, which I think is probably what he'll get from someone around the league.
I think here's what he needs to do, though. He needs to lock himself in the gym with like one of those all access cameras starting as soon as they win the title, and basically do nothing but ball handling drills for like a week and a half straight, and then just release the footage of it like day after day after day, showing how much progress he's making and like how he's totally overhauling his offensive game. I mean, if I was his agent and him, that's what I'd be doing. And he's a pretty shrewd guy, because I think that's the big question. Like, does he handle the ball well enough where like if you promote him into that number one or number two scorer role, can he create enough for himself to do it consistently? And I think he needs work there. And I'm actually kind of surprised he hasn't made more progress to date. I understand his role is pretty narrow there, but he also seems to be like the kind of guy who understands, you know, kind of big picture what his game needs. And it needs that.
Yeah, it's I think ever since his rookie year, we've been saying like if he can learn to handle the ball, like good things will happen. And we're still not quite there. But back to the Spurs Warriors. So here's where I am at this point. I look at, I would say it's a toss up if those two meet in the playoffs, except that I wonder whether the Spurs can stay healthy down the, I think there's sort of a 50-50 chance of the Spurs staying healthy. So that I think that if they make it there, intact, it's a toss up, but at this point I'm still like 75% Golden State, because I don't know if San Antonio can stay healthy. Where are you with them.
I would still give, just because of the home court advantage aspect, I would still give, you know, Golden State probably a 75% chance of winning that series. But I would qualify that by saying this San Antonio team is better than any team the Warriors faced in the postseason last year. And I'm not sure it's really that close. You know, I think San Antonio, in terms of cohesion and depth, and the way they were just able to completely lock up the Warriors' offense. And there was never a spurt, I didn't really feel like, in that game. I mean, Golden State really never got loose. And so many of their guys were struggling that you got to give it to the defense. And so, and also Greg Popovich showed great flexibility in just saying, sorry, Tim, like, you're not going to play. You get 8 minutes. I mean, and that was a big question to me coming into the season is like, was he going to have the guts to do that? Or they just try to ride and stay big? And just, you know, trust that their talent could win the matchup advantages. And instead, they kind of beat Golden State at their old game. And it's really hard to slow down the Warriors' small ball approach. And they did it for 48 minutes. And, I mean, we've kind of seen that before in San Antonio. When San Antonio is at home, they're so good at dictating the style of the play, exactly how they want, deliberate offense, you know, lots of loose balls. I mean, they're all over the place getting those. And then, you know, making every single shot tough, contested, no free points in transition. And they did all of that. And so to me, you know, if you're a Spurs fan, you're never more excited this season than you were after Saturday night.
Yeah. I mean, for me, watching that game, my two takeaways were after 3 days of NCAA tournament, it was like, oh, my God, there's actually basketball where there's not a charge called every 90 seconds. So
you know what else, that, you know what else,
that alone made the whole night worth it for me. And then also I like Steph looked more human in San Antonio than we've seen him all year. And it was the most discombobulated that we've seen him since sort of the beginning of the finals last year. And I mean, Golden State, if you're a Golden State fan, there's all kinds of things you can look to say that that game doesn't really matter. But the Spurs being able to take him out of his rhythm like that is a big deal. And that's why. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, just let's quick give some credit to the coaching adjustment there. Like LaMarcus Aldridge in the first game trying to, you know, switch on to Steph and contain him. And he looks like he's walking on ice skates in that game in Oracle. And he just can't do it. And Steph's just pulling up and hitting all these shots around him and doing whatever he wants. And they make the quick adjustment. They say, look, LaMarcus, you don't have to try to stay in front of him and, you know, handle him one-on-one. You just run him off the line. And if he gets by you off the dribble, that's fine. We're going to have people behind you to help. I mean, that's exactly the right coaching decision. You know, it takes away Steph threes. It makes him make decisions. It puts him into traffic. And to me, like, you know, that was a big difference. I mean, that's part of the reason why he looked so uncomfortable is that they played him differently and it worked.
See, this is why we do the pod together. You see those things. I was just sitting there being like, oh my God, thank you for not calling a charge. But you're noticing the little things that Pop is doing. I'm excited. That definitely made me excited for the playoffs because it'll be fun. But let's talk about your second half standouts here.
Well, we talked about Chris Paul a little bit. I mean, he's just been absolutely insane. And it's funny, like if a team isn't like charging up the standings, it's really easy to overlook like which of their guys are really playing great down the stretch, you know, because the Clippers are really hanging. I mean, they're just kind of hanging by a thread, and they've lost a bunch of, you know, big time games against, you know, major opponents by double digits. It's been pretty ugly. But still, I mean, like, let's give CP3 some credit for what he's doing. And I know that Russ and Steph probably have those first team all NBA spots locked up. But boys, Chris belongs in the conversation, and he's going to have to be a second team pick no matter what. I mean, it's just the numbers he's putting up are crazy, the usage he's doing it at, and then just his impact in terms of when he's on the court versus when he's off, like I mentioned earlier. You know, it's unbelievable. And then the other guys we should talk about who are really surging is the Heat. You know, I mean, you look right up and down the roster, whether it's, you know, rookie Josh Richardson, whether it's Joe Johnson, you know, picked up at the deadline, whether it's Hassan Whiteside really kind of settling into a backup role behind Amari Stoudemire, of all people. I mean, basically their whole roster is surging during the second half. It's translating into the second best point differential in the NBA after the All-Star break.
I was
looking
at those numbers, actually.
It's crazy.
I was looking for Giannis lineup stats, And because I just am I have a Giannis obsession. And so I got deep into the like NBA.com/stats and the lineup data. And two of the top five lineups are Heat lineups, and they're completely different lineups too. There's one which I love. It's kind of like the old guy crew with Wade, Joe Johnson, Amari. And then there's another one with Hassan Whiteside, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow. And so, yeah, it's almost like because of Spurs Warriors and the NCAA tournament, like the whole world didn't see Miami beat the crap out of the Cavs on Saturday night. But they are going to be a fun team to watch going forward.
Yeah, I have been pretty dismissive of Miami basically since the preseason. And after digging
in, same with me.
Yeah, and after digging in a little bit, it's like, well, if Josh Richardson just doesn't miss ever from three pointers, like if he continues to shoot like 65% on three pointers, well, I guess we're going to probably have to take them pretty seriously. And they also have the experience factor, which I think helps too. I mean, the Bosch thing is so weird. Like having all this happen without Bosch, having all these other guys kind of step up and find the right mix and the right balance for their roles, having Whiteside somehow buy into a backup role and still put up these gigantic numbers in a contract year. I mean, these are things that I really would not have predicted. So I think if you're a Heat fan, I think, if I was a Heat fan, I would almost be expecting an Eastern Conference Finals run at this point. I mean, I know that's a little bit optimistic, but it's like they're the most experienced. I mean, Wade's got more experience than basically everybody else in the conference besides LeBron. They're gelling at the right point. They're playing the best basketball here over the last 5 weeks or so. They're getting nice contributions from, unexpected sources. You know, they've found some gold with their rookies. That's a lot to like.
Yeah, I'm into it. It's I kind of before the season, I was pretty dismissive and was like there because like on paper, it's like a fantasy basketball team. But the fit with and it looks good. It looks like they're the second best team in the East. But like the fit with Dragic and Wade didn't make a lot of sense. The fit with Whiteside and Bosch didn't make a lot of sense. And I was kind of expecting sort of a miserable like 6-7 seed season from them. But to be fair to us, we didn't know that like Josh Richardson would come out of nowhere. He's like a made up player in NBA 2K, and he's come out and is actually like a really useful piece on the perimeter. Tyler Johnson is pretty awesome as sort of like the deli of South Beach. It's a good mix, and they've actually turned into one of the more fun teams in the East that somehow has been kind of overlooked. So yeah, I'm in on the Heat bandwagon. Who else? Give me one more standout from the second half.
Well, let's give some love to Lance Stephenson for what he's doing in Memphis. I mean, it's another situation where like, the team is just clinging by a thread, right? I mean, they should be tumbling.
I will always give love to Lance Stephenson.
I mean, they should be tumbling down the standings, yet they're just hanging tough in the fifth seed, no problem. It's chaos there, but Lance definitely deserves.
If that team makes the playoffs, it's going to be so crazy to watch Matt Barnes and Lance Stephenson and who's the rookie from Tennessee, Jarrell Martin. It's like, how is this a playoff team? How is this an NBA team? I don't even know how they're fielding a roster right now. It's great to see Lance because this is peak Lance. When you just sort of give him the ball and say, listen, man, we have no other options. Go do whatever you can. It's actually pretty fun.
Oh, he finally found a team that was desperate enough to turn to him. And he's responded pretty well. And just the last guy to mention real quick is Tobias Harris in Detroit. I think he's got like when he's on the court, they've got like 107 offensive rating. So it's, a little bit bump up from what it was before. It seemed like it was a pretty seamless integration there offensively. He fits well. His 3-point shooting numbers are up because it's just like all catch and shoot stuff now. So all the things we expected in terms of fitting the Stan Van Gundy system as sort of the spread four and kind of sliding in with their other young guys, it has pretty much worked like right off the bat. Like there hasn't been much of a delay. They're still in the playoff picture. I think they're basically mathematically tied for the eighth seed. So I think the Pistons have got to be really happy with how that trade worked out. They sacrificed some depth by trading 2-for-1 there. but I think they're set up really nicely now for the rest of the season, then also going forward into the future. So to me, you know, Tobias Harris stepping up a little bit here since the trade deadline, that's another one, you know, kind of worth pointing out as like a surging team.
Let me play devil's advocate, though. I love the Pistons. I want Stan Van Gundy to succeed. But I read your Tobias, the Tobias section in your piece. And I kind of wonder, like, this is kind of what I was talking about with the Celtics, trading like solid pieces for a bigger name. And Tobias, like you said, in the article, he's giving up more. The defense is suffering without him. And I don't know if he's good enough on offense to justify sacrificing elsewhere.
No, I feel you. I mean,
what do you think?
There's definitely a trade-off because their defensive numbers have declined pretty substantially compared to when Ilyasova was kind of like in that same spot. But I think number one, it's always going to be easier to find chemistry offensively than defensively, like quickly when you're doing it mid-season. I think number two, like, he's never really, I mean, this is like the first time he's found a good basketball fit, right? So I still think like the book on him in terms of, you know, what's he going to be 2 years from now has still yet to be written, just because he bounced around multiple times.
Yeah, he's still 23 years old.
Yeah, and he bounced around multiple times and he wasn't getting a lot of minutes early. And Orlando has been a mess, as we've kind of made fun of them in previous episodes. So I think there's still some TBD there. And also, I think they've got a lot of pretty good defensive pieces, you know, like on paper, whether it's, you know, Stanley Johnson as he, you know, progresses through his career, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think Marcus Morris, you know, he's physical. So they've got some guys there who are going to handle those roles. I think it's more about not even just what he brings individually offensively, but his impact on the team. When you're able to be that credible three-point shooting threat and your best player is a center who loves to dunk, loves to finish lobs, and loves to do pick and rolls with your point guard, and your point guard loves to run pick and rolls all day long, I mean, the greater benefit of having that extra dependable shooter, it extends past just one guy. So to me, like, I think they're going to be able to figure out the defensive things. It's not like Stan Van Gundy hasn't worked around poor defensive pieces in the past, you know, like guys like Hito Turkoglu and right on down the line. So I think they're going to be able to figure out, you know, how to make it work next year better than it has so far this season.
I think they're in good shape. You're probably right. But the worry that I have with Detroit is, it's funny, like, I started the year worried about Detroit and then they looked great. And then they won the trade deadline with the Tobias Harris trade. And my worry is that Van Gundy has basically put together all these pieces that make perfect sense together. And the problem is that they're just not that great. Like, Reggie Jackson is like a B or a B plus as a point guard. Tobias Harris is like a B or a B plus. Everybody right down the line, like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like, he's okay. And I sort of expected that team to take off a little bit, and they just haven't. Like, they're still in the ninth seed, I think, right now. And they looked like, I watched the Wizards the other night, beat the crap out of them, and they just, they look off. And maybe, honestly, the issue might be with Drummond, because his numbers have tailed off as the year's gone on.
Well, here's what I would say. I mean, this is a team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2009, right? So the fact that they're, and they haven't won more, they've already won more games with, you know, a month left in the season than they've won since 2009. So I think they're already playing with house money here. Like, even if they kind of fall out of, if they don't make the playoffs, if they're on the bubble, look on the outside, I think that this season's already been a win for them, just by the simple fact that, you know, it's hard to dig out of that sub 30 win trench, you know, and they've really made some substantial progress this season. So I think, you know, they clearly have a lot of roster work to do. Like, I'm agreeing with you in terms of, like, does their starting lineup, is it loaded or overwhelming with like A-list talent? No, it's definitely not. But Drummond has been playing, you know, every single night. I think that's part of it. You know, as a big guy, he's playing pretty big minutes.
He's just wearing down, you think?
I think a little bit, yeah. And then I also think that their bench is just so thin and they don't really have a lot, you know, else going on. So they're going to add some pieces this summer, hopefully that will improve their depth a little bit. Hopefully Stan Van Gundy doesn't overpay like he has some of these other guys in the past. But I mean, if they didn't enjoy almost perfect health from their starters this season, I think that they would be in a much different position record wise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I maybe my issue is that like I want too much greatness for Stan Van Gundy and I need to just be patient. And because I also love Drummond, but we'll see. We'll see what happens down the stretch. The Wizards are locked in a tight race with Chicago and Detroit for the right to get their asses kicked by LeBron in the first round. So it should be interesting. Let's close with the tournament. Where what have you liked so far from the NCAA tournament?
Well, this is going to make me sound like a horrible person, but I kind of agreed with LeBron's tweet about, you know, the Northern Iowa guys need to just quit basketball after that loss. That I have never seen anything like that meltdown outside of like a sixth grade basketball game. So I think like I read a tweet from someone who was saying anyone who watched that 45 seconds and thinks that the NBA is better than college basketball, just show them that, you know, that stretch of the game or whatever. And I had the exact opposite approach. It's like if I wanted to watch guys inbound the basketball straight to the other team so that they could score layup after layup, time after time, I really would just like volunteer and coach third graders. Like if that's what I thought was going to be entertaining, that's what I would do with myself. I don't want to do that. I want to watch Steph Curry hit bombs from 40 feet. I want to watch LeBron, you know, finish alley-oops from J.R. Smith off the glass. I want to see true skill, not meltdowns, and, you know, not just in like chaos.
That was excruciating. The Northern Iowa thing was tough. Like there's parts of March that are legitimately awesome and fun, but that wasn't awesome. Like I don't want to watch guys just like melt down on national television. And I felt even worse because their shot, I think it was Friday night, the shot to beat Texas was so cool and like everything the NCAA tournament is supposed to be. And then Sunday was just, that was tough, man. And I'm with you in general. It's like we talked last week about like just the NBA is better than college. And I hate that I've become one of those people. But basically what's happened is that college basketball has gotten worse in the last 10 years. And the talent just isn't the same. And then the NBA has gotten a lot better in that same time. So part of the problem with me watching the tournament has been that I hate that I don't enjoy it, but I just like, there's just a point guard falls over every 5 minutes. There's stupid charging calls. Like college basketball needs to just outlaw the charge because it ruins the games. I feel bad for Kentucky because the way they're officiated, I mean, they have like NBA athletes and the way they're officiated puts them at a disadvantage in close games. The Indiana fans in the Sports Illustrated office will be pissed off by that. But yeah, it's tough a little bit. Who are the NBA guys you've liked?
Well, a couple things to go along with your charging rant. How many ticky-tack and ones get given up in the college game? It's just unbelievable. Like these guys don't realize if you tap someone's arm while he's shooting, he might still score, you know? It just happens over and over again. That's one of my pet peeves. I think my big issue with this tournament too, and why I kind of think the Northern Iowa, you know, thrill of victory, agony of defeat swing is going to wind up being kind of the headlining moment from it, is because basically all of the top prospects are already out, right? I mean, how many guys are even left?
Yeah.
So what are we scouting? I don't know. Who are we scouting or who are we supposed to be watching? It's kind of like we're watching, it's the old thing, like you're watching the front of the jersey, not the back of the jersey. And usually I'm the other way. I pretty much just care about the back of the jersey because I want to know who's going to be in the NBA next year. And right now, I mean, who's left? Buddy? Is he, you know, who else is even in the tournament at this point who's like a top 15 prospect? I guess Domantas Sabonis. I don't know. I mean, you probably know better than
so
I do,
far,
but there's not very many guys
so
left.
So far, the biggest scouting surprise has been hearing people buzz about Mekhi Mason as an NBA prospect and then finding out he's this little white guy from Yale. I was shocked by that for about 5 minutes. And then there's Brandon Ingram, man. I've been meaning to confess this to you. I'm all in on Ingram as the number one pick. Uh-oh. At this point. He's too good. He's too good. And there's too many questions with Ben Simmons. I do like Ben Simmons, but it's time to go to the dark side. Ingram is the best player.
Wow. See, this is why this podcast works, because I never change my opinion about anything. And every episode, you've got a new opinion. This is.
I mean, look, it's just like I reserve the right to change my opinion throughout this draft process. But okay. Ingram is like he's scoring more now than he did at the beginning of the year. And he's just his body is perfect for where the league is going. And he's more fun to watch. Like he's more of a fluid athlete than Simmons.
Okay, so yeah. So what did he show in the first couple of games for people who maybe didn't see him, or what were some of the highlights?
I mean, first of all, it's tough. It's tough to judge Brandon Ingram versus Yale. I don't even know who they played in the first round. Yale. Oh, it was I think it was UNC Charlotte. Whoever it was, I was definitely rooting for that team. But Ingram, like he's got range out to 25 feet and he's able to put the ball on the floor. And I do think that it pains me to compliment Coach K, but he's really good at teaching guys how to sort of move on the court and play more of an NBA style. And so I think the year at Duke has been really helpful for him. And, but mostly it's that he's 18 years old and he's already much further along, than I think anyone expected. And when you couple that with the ability to knock down shots from anywhere, like that's tough to pass up.
So where are we putting him on the comps now? Like McGrady ceiling, or what's the,
I mean, it's tough because he really does remind me of Durant, but he's not at Durant's level. Like Durant was just like assassinating people at Texas. But I think that that's sort of his ceiling is a Durant kind of in the mix for all NBA, like maybe not all NBA first team, but, this is such a nerdy podcast. Good God. But yeah, like I think he's going to be, he's all-star level, like swingman and better than like a DeMar DeRozan all-star.
All right. I'm going to make a pledge right now. I'm going to watch every minute that Brandon Ingram plays for the remaining part of the tournament.
yes.
And then I'm not going to change my opinion no matter what.
All right. Good. Good. That's a good place to close. We'll look forward to some Ingram this weekend. Anyways, it's been good. We will come back next week with some KD conspiracy theories. And thanks, Ben.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, man. Peace.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.